So I made you laugh so you wouldn't be depressed. So I have an interesting morning this morning talking to track four with Jocelyn Wallace from Vision of Hope and I doing about postpartum depression, then I'm doing this session. So if I'm not depressed by the end of the morning, we're all doing great, huh? Helping those suffering with depression. Statistics indicate that many Americans describe themselves as depressed. And again, I'm not really gotten some good numbers. Some people talk about 25 million Americans being depressed. One of the quotes we have is that the rate after 1950 is twice as much as it was before 1950. But over and over and over again, we say there's more and more and more Americans describe themselves as depressed. And secondly, depression can be complicated because it's used to describe many different things. And here's the point I'm trying to make. People who call themselves depressed can be describing a wide range of issues. And that's the part we just have to remember. It's a wide range of issues, wide range of severity of the problem. Some have shut down physically. They just can't do anything. Some may have been hospitalized. Some may be handling their life, some normal life duties pretty well. Some would use words like, well, I'm just discontent. Or I worry a lot, or I'm anxious, or I'm stressed out. So we use a lot of different words, and it's complicated because it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. That's the challenge. One of the challenges we have with this. And those who are depressed often speak of pain and darkness and numbness and worthlessness as their constant companions. From Ed Welch's book, A Stubborn Darkness. In his book, he says, one quote was, I felt like I was walking through a field of dead flowers and found one beautiful rose. But when I bend down to smell it, I fell into an invisible hole. I am now the most miserable man living. If what I feel were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would be not one cheerful face on earth. See, the darkness as their constant companion. We will not spend a lot of time here, but you just can't rely on the medical model's explanation for the cause of depression. A lot of interesting things on this one we could say. But understand that the way in medicine we make the diagnosis of depression comes from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. So it's a manual of all of the labels in psychiatry and then how you make the diagnosis from the label. We're currently in the DSM-4, a DSM-4 text revision, and they're talking about a DSM-5, which may be totally different, but they don't know how it's going to be different yet. But in the DSM, there's a list of 9 criteria, and you have to have 5 of the 9 to be present during the same 2-week period, represent a change from previous functioning. But the diagnosis that we make medically is based upon thinking and acting, not observable, measurable changes in one's body. We don't utilize laboratory tests, x-rays, MRIs, or CT scans to make the diagnosis of depression medically. That's how it is in the DSM. Understand what scientific research to this point is saying. And again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. We just don't have the kind of time to do this. We've done it in other sessions, and we'll do it in track 2. But there's never been any provable neurotransmitter imbalance or balance. And the most common theory for the last 20 years has been there's an imbalance in brain neurotransmitters. Typically, we've talked about norepinephrine, dopamine, and more recently, serotonin. However, the medical literature is clear that the theory cannot be proven to be true. And we do some other sessions with you on talking about physical illness and talking about psychological diagnosis, those two lectures, okay? And again, we believe that this talk on depression fits into the psychological diagnosis category, not the illness category. But again, that's where we disagree, but that's what the scientific research is saying. Now, we absolutely want to understand the depth of the counselee's suffering with depression. And this comes from Ed Welch's book, also Stubborn Darkness. It says, contrary to what we might think, God says that strong faith can coexist with emotional highs, lows, and everything in between. It's a myth that faith is always smiling. It's a myth that faith is always smiling. And the suffering is real, and for some it's very intense, and should never be minimized or disputed. Can I tell you how we do that sometimes? We pat them on the hand and say, oh, it's not so bad, or oh, you'll get better. What does that do? Minimizes, right? This suffering is real. And we need to ask some questions to gain further information. Questions like, what's the history of their depression? What's the sequence of events? What happened? How long has the depression been present? Have you always been depressed, or when did it start? And what was happening at that time when your depression started? Ask about family history. Is there anyone else in the family with depression? And what are the details about that? Ask about difficulties or challenges in their life. So learn about the problems, the situations, the events that are associated with the depression. It usually represents some difficult or unpleasant circumstance, some conflict, some argument, some pressure, or even personal sins. What are the challenges? What are the difficulties? And ask this question: what made those challenges particularly devastating? What made those challenges bad? And my encouragement to you is, don't assume you know the specific details. Well, my friend who had two children and she was healthy and skinny and well was recently diagnosed with diabetes. She has type 1 diabetes. She's going to be on insulin for the rest of her life. She has to have shots twice a day. She's going to be on an insulin pump. She has to change her diet. Has all these things. I know why she's depressed, because if that happened to me, here's how I would feel. And my encouragement to you is, don't put yourself into them. Just ask the question. Ask them to tell you. Don't think you know just because of your own personal experience. Ask them the question. Get them to explain what the details are. What made this so devastating? And just ask the question. Ask how they chose to respond to the challenges. And that's really where we work. That's where we want to be, on responses. And the response is both in thinking and actions. And some possible responses could be, well, you just don't understand how much it hurt, or how unpleasant it was, or will it ever let up, or what will happen to me? And the response is unbiblical. Think about this, if we're honest. The response is unbiblical when it focuses on self, focuses on me. It doesn't see God in the problem or deal with the problems as the Bible teaches. Ask about any changes in the way they've handled challenges or difficulties. What did they think would happen with the response that they had? And how did they think that response would help? And then I also just encourage you, here's another question that I always encourage you to ask. What's the role of the Lord in their life? And another way to say this is, how do you fit God into all of these problems? Where does God fit into all of these problems? Because again, you're just not telling them and just giving them answers. You're really trying to understand them. This part is very critically important. For many people, they've never had anyone that took the time to understand them. They've just had, oh, you're depressed? Then do A, B, C, and D. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about really understanding them, both in the way they think, what's going on inside, what they want, what their motivations are, what their desires are. Asking the question to spend time. When you do this, this helps build a relationship with the person. It helps build involvement. It's a care. But can I tell you what else it does? It takes time. It takes effort. It takes listening instead of. And sometimes we're really good at this and not at this. So asking these questions really helps us understand the person. Allow them to express their frustrations and fears and worries and disappointment. Think of Psalms 13, 1 and 2. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart all the day? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? listen to their frustrations, their fears, their worries, and disappointments.